Good evening. I'm Pearl Noble, and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank Paul for inviting me to come down and speak with you. And, you know, Virgil introduced himself to me, and he said he was taping the meeting. And he said he would have it ready for me after I was all done. And I asked him if he would edit it if I screwed up. And he said, no, I could do that on my own. He said, but he said, Pearl, the people here haven't hung anybody in a while. So anyway, first thing I should tell you is my sponsor's from Texas. And she says they have a saying in Texas, that's where she got sober, that if you don't share your sobriety date, it's because you don't have one. And my sobriety date is January 28, 1991, and for that I'm forever grateful. My sponsor has also taught me that you need three things to be a member in good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous. You need a sobriety date, I gave you that. You need a sponsor, and my sponsor is Polly P. And you need a home group. My home group is the Monday night Steel Beach Speakers Meeting, where you'll see me sitting second row, third seat in, and I've been sitting there for a long time, and my sponsor sits right here. So if I don't get her any other time, I got her right then. And they're constantly telling us to go, shh. We didn't realize we were talking, you know, and that's just the way it is. You know, when people get married long about 7 years, they have something they call a seven-year itch. I just told you I was a little over 7 years sober, and I sort of got the itch this year. Problem was, I didn't know where to scratch, and I was headed for some trouble. And I think I sort of, actually my sponsor cornered me, and I think I've gotten my way out of that. And the problem was, I didn't know what the problem was. That was what the problem was. The problem was people at work all of a sudden, they weren't doing it right. And you know, once those people at work aren't doing it right, people in AA aren't doing the meetings right. Have you noticed how that sort of progresses? And the family's screwing up all over the place. And my sponsor suggested that all those places have one common denominator, and it's me. So we did just a little bit of work, and what she was doing was she was bringing me tapes from people that she would meet, and they were talking about going through some kind of itch at some point of their sobriety, and she said, Pearl, you just reached it. And she calls them opportunities to grow. I just call them pain. You know, when you're in pain, you know you're there. You know you're there. And fortunately for me, I did all the things you taught me early on here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because what you taught me was to suit up and show up no matter what. You taught me to stick my hand out to newcomers, and you told me to be of maximum service. And all during that time, I kept doing that whether I wanted to or not, just like a newcomer. Just did it, because that's what you taught me to do. So anyway, I want to thank you for inviting me down here, and I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I was born and raised on a farm in Illinois, and my father was an alcoholic. But I never saw my father drink, and I never saw him drunk, because he quit drinking when I was about 2 years old. And he passed away when I was 87 days sober. I thought I would delay it. Actually, I had one of those birthdays last Sunday. My sponsor gave me a birthday. It's one of those O birthdays. I won't tell you which number comes in front of it. I don't know whether that's good or that's... I'm still breathing, though. But anyway, he passed away when I was 87 days sober. And the only thing he ever wanted for his daughter was for his daughter to quit drinking. And I never got to tell him that. I was growing up, and my father loved to tell his drunk stories. And he never went to an AA meeting, but I think instinctively he knew how to share his experience, strength, and hope, because he loved to tell his drunk stories, and I loved to listen to him. And my favorite one was, I told you we lived in Illinois, and he went out, they called them taverns, they didn't call them bars then, and went out to a tavern on a Friday night to have a beer with his brother. So all they were going to do was just have a couple beers. And they came to in Fresno, California, members of the United States Navy, and they hadn't a clue how they got there. And I am my daddy's daughter. When I tell you my story, you'll figure that one out. So, and my mother passed away a couple of years ago, and she was 86 years old. This lady was 86 years old, and she loved it because she could look me straight in the eye and say, I never had a drop in my life. Whew. Don't know how she managed, but she did, and she was not impressed with my sobriety at all, you know. Anyway, My dad loved to tell those stories, and I loved to listen to him. But he had to quit doing it because one time I heard Mom in the kitchen telling him, "Ed, you got to quit telling those stories to Pearl. She thinks they're funny," and I did. But anyway, I knew two things growing up. One from my father, I wasn't going to be an alcoholic, and one from my mother, I wasn't going to marry one. That's just the way it was going to be. Anyway, I'm in college, and I met this guy, and I went over to the University of Arizona, right next door here, and he asked me on a date, and he pulled up the red light, and he popped the glove compartment of the car, and he pulled out a pint of vodka, and he reached underneath the seat and pulled out the orange juice and asked me if I'd like to have a drink. And with all the arrogance I could muster up, I looked him straight in the eye, and I said, "I don't drink, and I don't go with guys who do." And 6 months later, we were married. Go figure, huh? Actually, I wasn't one of you people who came to meeting and told you I drank at an early age. I told you I didn't. I had my first drink when I was 28 years old. And everything right was going in my life. You know, I had everything exactly the way I wanted it. I was married, I had three sons, and I was teaching school. And when I was growing up, that's all I ever wanted to do. Have a family and teach school. That was the good life. But I had a bad day. I don't remember what caused my bad day, but I had one. And I went home from school, and I don't know anything about mixing drinks, but I poured a water glass full of scotch, and I drank it. And I'm like Barbara, my first drink. I must have had a lot of those because I had my first drink, my first drunk. I blacked out. I came to the next morning and called in sick to work, and I swore I'd never do it again. And I didn't. I never called in sick again. I learned to function with hangovers. I learned to function drunk. I learned to function with alcohol. That's just the way it was, because once I discovered alcohol, that's what I did, was I drank. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, a daily blackout drinker, and actually I was sort of like a round-the-clock blackout drinker. I was the type that would drink, come to, drink some more, and come to again. You come to, you drink. I know what to do. You see, I'm a drinker, and that's just the way my drinking was. And, you know, I can't stand up here and tell you I was an exciting drunk. I wasn't. I basically drank at home, you know, on my living room couch. And once I discovered alcohol, you know, it was very, very good. I don't have the kind of story where it went to your fingertips and did anything magic. What it did was it just calmed that inner rage that I seemed to have picked up at an early age. And I don't know where I got that from. But, you know, if I'd have a drink, I felt better. You acted better, and I know you acted better because you treated me better, or it seemed like you did, and actually while I was drinking, it didn't really matter. You know, I just felt better when I drank. Alcohol gave me that ease and comfort that I needed to go through life. It just was there. So I was an at-home drinker. I wasn't a bar drinker. I just sat on the end of my couch and drank. But sometimes that was boring. Got to pep this thing up a bit, you know. Life's going, and I'm sitting. But I had a benefit. My husband was with a major airline, and I had a pass. In airline lingo, it's called a P1 pass, positive face first class. That's what P1 stands for. All I had to do was show up at the airport, show him my pass, and I could go anywhere in the world because this was an international carrier, and that's what I'd do. I'd get my passport, and I'd get a piece of luggage, and I'd either pack it or not pack it. I wasn't staying anywhere. I was going somewhere. I just wasn't staying. You know, got to go. Feet are itchy. I'm going. And I just show up at that airport. And I know it takes 10 hours to get to Tokyo and 14 hours to get to Australia and 10 hours to get to Europe because I went to all those places. You know, that's what I do. I got on the airplane. They start you on the ground with mimosas. You know, and then they take off and they come around and they'll give you anything you wanted. And that's what I drank, just anything I wanted. They got it. I drank it. And I get to the end of that flight, and I go in the gift shop, and I pick up some cards, and I address them and send them back home saying, "I saw this today. Tell you about it later." Takes 6 hours to refuel that airline and get those seat belts crossed and get it going again, and 6 hours later, I'm on that airplane heading home. Told you I wasn't staying anywhere. I was going somewhere. Now it's time to go home. You know, and it worked for me. You know, I was 2 years sober, and I'm driving up to my morning meeting one morning, and this announcer comes on the radio and says, "Have you ever been to Paris and not seen the Eiffel Tower?" And I thought, what's the big deal? I did it three times. You know, I didn't see anything strange about that, you know. You know, I don't know about you, but I had a few drinking buddies, and we had a one-upsmanship. You know, like, can you top this story? Well, the last I heard, I had the top story. You see, with this little pass I had, I decided one time to fly around the world. Never did that before. I thought that'd be really great. So I did. I got my passport and my luggage, and I went to LAX, and I got on that airplane, and we flew from LA to Tokyo. And I drank in Tokyo. And we went from Tokyo to Hong Kong. And I drank in Hong Kong, and we went from there to Bangkok. And from Bangkok, we went to Tehran. We were allowed in Tehran then. They didn't have any bars there, but I got to sit in the Clipper Club, and they gave me some booze. And then from there, we went to New Delhi. And then we went to Frankfurt, London, San Francisco, and home. And I never left the airport. I flew around the world in 7.5 days. Whew. I got back home and somebody called me on the phone and I'm talking to them and all of a sudden I said to them, who are you and what are we talking about and can this wait? You know, I mean, I was in pretty bad shape. But that's just sort of the way my drinking went. And you know, when a person drinks like that, the marriage has got to bite the dust. You know, it's got to go. I don't, by the time I finish my drinking, you know, my drinking has reached the point that that's all I have the energy to do. I don't have the energy to worry about a husband or children or a house or anything else. The only thing I've got the energy for is to look at the booze. Do I have enough booze? Is there enough here? Do I need to go get it? That's the only thing I'm capable of doing. By this time, I'm also living in Connecticut. We had gotten transferred from California to Connecticut. And getting booze there was a lot easier than here. You might, if you're still drinking, you might want to consider Connecticut. If you got that itch to go, you can pick up the phone in Connecticut and call them and they deliver. Woo! I think that's when I became an alcoholic. I just let them deliver. You know, why not? You know, so the marriage has got to bite the dust and I'm living in Connecticut and I got to get a lawyer. Can't handle this one on my own. I don't know about you, but I could take care of anything. I had a solution for everything when I was out there drinking. You asked me a question, I got an answer. I got a solution. But I had to get a lawyer. They told me I needed one, so I got this lawyer, and she asked me if I drank, and I assured her that I enjoyed a glass of wine on occasion. And she suggested that since she didn't know me, I was going to have to help her, and she suggested I didn't drink, so I didn't. And I didn't marry. That divorce took a while. It took about 6 months, and I didn't drink for 6 months. And that was good news and bad news. I was going nuts, but it felt good, you know, because I knew if I could go this long and not drink, I wasn't going to be an alcoholic like my dad. I just wasn't going to be an alcoholic. You can't go for 6 months and not drink, and you are not going to be an alcoholic. But, you know, that lawyer called me on the phone that day, and she said, you know, Pearl, you can go back to California, because that's all I wanted to do. I kept my house out here in California. I don't know why I did that. But anyway, I did, and so I had a place to come back to. And she said, you can go back, because it's all over. It's all been taken care of now. And so I did. I got ready, and I went in one more time to the airport and with my 13 pieces of luggage and a portable television set that we fought over and he left for work and I took it and flew back to California. And when I got on that airplane that morning, that cabin attendant came up and said, Pearl, after we take off, would you like to have something to drink? And I said, yes. And she said, what would you like? And I said, I don't care. Just make it a good one. And we took off and she brought me a water glass about this big. And it was full of gin. And she said she had made me the perfect martini. You martini drinkers here, you know what a perfect one is. You fill a water glass full of gin, you lean over it, you say vermouth, and you chug-a-lug. They became my drinks of choice. Got to California, a martini drinker. Left here a Scotch hound and got back a martini drinker. Big book talks about something about switching those drinks around. And I drank those for a while, but you know, gin got me into trouble. I don't know about you. Gin is a troubling drink. If you're a newcomer here and you're still on the gin, cut it out. It gets you into trouble. Got me into trouble, and I'm sitting in my own home. I told you, I stay home. By the way, my pass has been cut off at the pass, so to speak, and so now I'm back to drinking on the couch. And I'm drinking on the couch one night, and I'm having those perfect martinis, enjoying them, enjoying the company and the martinis. And doorbell rang, and it was two of Fountain Valley's finest. And I talk to myself a lot because I live alone. And I said to myself, don't answer the door. Not a good thing. You've had too much to drink. But I'm a blackout drinker. And the next thing I know, they're in my family room, and we're negotiating. They want me to go with them. I don't want to go. They said they wouldn't arrest me. I said, I'll go. I went. I don't think I had a choice, you know. What happened was I told you I blackout. Well, I called somebody in Connecticut and threatened suicide, just something really exciting. Got their adrenaline pumping, and they called the Fountain Valley Police Department, and they came looking for me. All that excitement over an idle threat, I don't know. Anyway, they took me down to that police station, and I told them I didn't have anybody in this world who cared about me, and I had no friends and no family. So I didn't want any of my family and friends involved in this mess I was in. I thought I could talk my way out of it. And about that time, a young man in our neighborhood grew up on me, and he became a policeman. He walked by, and he said, Hi, Miss Noble, how are you, and how are your sons? Well, blew my cover, and they left, and the next thing I know, they've got my youngest son down at the police station, and I think that was the night I noticed my pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. That young son's a policeman for the city of Irvine. And he took me home, and I promised him, you know, I wouldn't drink any more of that gin. And I didn't after I finished that bottle. I turned my life and my will over the care of white wine. I heard someone else say here tonight, you don't waste anything. Wine is a lady's drink. You know, but I had to get the big bottles. You know, I drink Gallo by the gallon. You know, screw top, easy to get to. Don't want those little things with the corks. Corks are too hard to get off. Not enough wine in the bottle. Why waste the energy? You know, you've just worked up another good thirst when you got to pop that cork. Just turn the cap and drink. I wasn't until I got to AA, I found a young man who worked in a pizza parlor, and they had those wine dispensers with the little spigot at the bottom, and he said he used to go and put his mouth in it. And I thought, why didn't I think of that? You know, I always wanted to figure out a way to get that wine bottle, a straw. I figured if I had a straw big enough, but I didn't drink out of those toothed glasses. I had those quart plastic glasses, you know, those. And so when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and they asked me how many drinks I had a day, I said, oh, a couple of those quart bottles every time I sat down. And then I did all the insane things with those wine bottles that I heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous do about hiding them in the neighbors. You know, trash man's counting them. I'm getting a little paranoid here. And until I realized the neighbors were watching, and then I hit them at the church dumpster. Until I realized the priest was watching. And about that time, you know, some lady called and asked me if I would help her enroll in college. And so we went down to Orange Coast Community College, and I helped her enroll down there. But when I pulled in the parking lot, they had dumpsters along that parking lot. I thought, hit. I enrolled in 4 8 a.m. classes. Got me down there early, and I could hike the wine bottles over in the dumpsters. And this friend said, girl, what are you taking those classes for? You had them years ago. I said, I need refresher courses. I wasn't working or anything at the time. I was refresher. I needed a dumpster. Is what I needed. But you know, this friend that I helped enroll in college, she called me one Monday morning, and she sounded like she was in a heap of hurt, and she asked if she could come over and talk to me. You know, I was down to her as a friend. You know, I lived in that area for a long time, and I had a lot of friends, but they were sort of leaving. I don't know where they were going or what they were doing, but they weren't including me in their plans, you know. I was sort of left. I got these three sons that I absolutely love, and I know they love me, but they were only coming around, popping in once in a while to see how Mom was doing, and they weren't staying. You know, they'd pop in and pop out, and that was sort of like good news, too, you know, because I don't drink in front of my sons. They stayed too long. Now I'm getting thirsty. You know, so they leave, and so I'm down to this one lady is a friend, and she's got a problem, and so I told her, come on over, and she came over, and the first thing she did was, I've known her for 17 years, and she had never done this before. You know, she put her arm around me, and she told me she loved me. And then we went in, we sat down, and I thought, this must be a real serious problem. And we sat down, and And I got ready to talk to her the only way I knew how to get ready. You know, you're going to help a friend solve a problem, you better chug a lot of some of that wine. Heavy thoughts going on here. And so I was just a little mellow, we'll put it that way, I was mellow. And then she asked me the dumbest question, you know. She asked me if I had a problem with alcohol. Well, I assured her I didn't. But in my story, I'm going to say that I had conversations, and I don't remember what happened, just like the policeman. Well, I don't remember. She stayed there a long time, and I don't remember how this came about. But by the time she left, I had agreed to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with her. And that was Monday, February 13th, 1989. And as she was leaving, she turned around and she said, "Now, are you going to call central office and ask where there's a meeting, or should I?" And I think I uttered the first honest words I had heard myself utter in a long time. I said to her, "You know, if you don't call, I won't." And so she left, and about an hour later, she called back, and she said, "Pearl, there's a newcomers meeting at a place called Howe Hall in Huntington Beach. It starts at 8 o'clock. I'll come and pick you up, and I'll take you." And so she did. Now, I got ready for that meeting the only way I know how to go anyplace. I can't go anyplace. I can't function. I can't do anything without alcohol because that's what I do. I drink. That's what I do. And so I got ready for that meeting the only way I knew how. I chug a lot some more of that wine. Boy, I'm going to the meeting Alcoholics Anonymous. I need some help here. So she came and picked me up, and she took me to that meeting, and I went to that meeting drunk. I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous drunk, and it wasn't to be my last either. So we got to that meeting that night, and it was a good-sized meeting. There was about 100, one of the guys, people that came with me tonight, Noel, he was at that meeting. I think there was about 100 people at that meeting, and at least half of them were newcomers. And they said something about if you're within your first 30 days, stand up and identify as a newcomer. Well, I'm a quick study. I saw these other people standing up and telling their names, so, and she nudged me, you know that nudge. And I stood up and I told you people, "I'm Pearl and I'm an alcoholic." And it seemed to make her happy. Because I sat back down, and at that meeting they go around the room and everybody identifies, and when it got to her, of course when it got to me, I told him one more time, "I'm Pearl and I'm an alcoholic." It got to her, she didn't say she was an alcoholic. So I caught my first resentment in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We went out for coffee afterwards, and I said to her, I said, "You know, you made me mad. You made me tell those people in that meeting there that I was an alcoholic, and you wouldn't even tell them you were one." And she said, "Pearl, I'm not an alcoholic." But she said, "My father died of a disease called alcoholism, and my oldest son has 1 year sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been active in Al-Anon for the past 5 years. I guess she recognized somebody when she saw them. But you know, for my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous has been there for me. You know, I told you I went to that very first meeting drunk, and I didn't hear much of anything you said, but for you newcomers here in this room tonight, I hope you hear what I heard that night. I couldn't hear much of anything, but what I heard that night is one of the reasons I'm standing here at this podium tonight. Because what I heard that night was, keep coming back. Everybody in that room said that. Everybody in that room who stood up and shared it occurred to me said, keep coming back. So I know I'm coming back. I know that. You're telling me to. I know I'm going to do it. I don't have any place else to go anyway. You told me to get a big book, and I bought a big book that night, and you told me to get a sponsor. And I didn't know about sponsors, so I figured I'd figure that one out sometime. You know, I'm coming back. I'll figure out the sponsor thing, you know. But I told you, you know, you people just made me feel a part of. You know, you stuck your hand out. You gave me your phone numbers. You called me. You made me feel a part of from the get-go. You went places and you did things and you took me right along with you. And you made me a service in Alcoholics Anonymous. You gave me jobs to do. You know, and I just loved it. I just loved it. But you asked me to do something that I couldn't do for my first 770 days in Alcoholics Anonymous. You asked me not to drink between meetings. So my first 700 plus days, I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous at least one a day, and sometimes two and sometimes even three, and I drank between every one of those meetings just about. And Noel here would take me to conventions. The only time I didn't drink was when I was at those conventions. But boy, I sure was glad when Sunday came around, because that meant I was going to go home and I was thirsty. You know, you can work up a heap of thirst at one of those AA conventions. At least I could. You know, and it occurred to me somewhere along the line, I wasn't going to enough meetings because I was only going to one a night. So I heard of a meeting up in Long Beach in the morning, and I started going to the morning meeting too. You know, I told you, people put me in service. You elected me secretary of the Tuesday night meeting, and every Tuesday night you say, newcomers, raise your hand, and my hand's up in the air. And I say, you got to get a new secretary. And they say, oh, no, Pearl, we want you to keep that job. We want you to keep coming back. Because that's what they were saying to me, was keep coming back. And I know you said other things to me, too, but that's what I heard. I heard keep coming back. You know, I take my commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous very seriously, and I keep them, drunk or sober. One of my favorite meetings, and I finally was able to get back there today, they treated me like a visitor. I hadn't been... I hadn't been there in a couple months. Got very busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, it's a beach meeting down in Boca Chica. It's down at the Inner Warner, and meet there every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, and they meet from 10 to noon. And I just love it. I've been going to that meeting for a little while, and they made me the parachute bringer. It was my job to show up there with this parachute and spread it out on the sand so when the people came to the meeting, they could put their chairs out and we could have a meeting. And the meeting starts at 10, and many times I'd show up as early as 8:30 and spread that parachute out just perfect, you know, just get it out. So they kept giving me hints. Willie told me 59 steps from the men's room. They told me the rectangle had to go a certain direction, and I'm listening. And you know, they don't tell those people to do that anymore. I think I was the only one listening. But, you know, I had a bad week one week. And it's the middle of July, and I came to, and reeking of alcohol and whatever wine. And I had on a pair of dirty jeans and a dirty sweatshirt. And I looked at my watch, and it was 10 to 10, and I'm going to be late to that meeting, and I've got the parachute. So I brushed my teeth and brushed my hair, and I grabbed that parachute, and I get in my car, and I rush down to the beach. And when I got down that beach that morning, my worst nightmare had come true. Because, you see, I have another disease, and Clancy calls it the disease of perception. You know, my head operates, and it tells me things, and those things aren't true, but I believe them. You know, Polly says my head's tweaked just a little. Some days it's a little more. But, you know things that aren't true, but I believe them at the time. So I get up on there in that beach with that parachute, and my head told me that you guys had moved the meeting. You didn't tell me where it was because you were tired of me coming to your meeting drunk. And so I'm standing on the beach, and I'm holding this parachute, and I'm crying because I don't know what I'm going to do now. I just being kicked out of AA with the parachute. And about that time, a little boy ran up to his mama and said, "Hey, Mama, I'm having so much fun. Can we come back tomorrow?" And she said, "No, son, tomorrow's Sunday. We got to go to church." I showed up the wrong day. Anyway, I left that beach that day, and I did the only thing I knew how to do. I stopped and bought a case of that wine. I mean, that was a close call. I was almost kicked out of AA. But what happened was the people in Alcoholics Anonymous were watching me and helping me. And I went to a sober Super Bowl party, and I was the only one drunk, and they let me stay. And as I went home that night, I polished off the rest of this wine, and I know it's over because it's not happening. You people told me I'd get there. You people told me the day would come when nothing would happen, and nothing would happen. I couldn't get drunk, and I couldn't get high, and I couldn't get out. I liked out. You know, when you go out, you don't have to function. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to pretend to be anybody. No responsibilities, no care. I liked out. I couldn't get out that Sunday. And my head began operating again, you know, and it told me, don't know what I'm going to do now. I can't drink, and I can't go to AA. AA didn't work. Why would I go back? You know, it just didn't work. So I wasn't showing up to my meetings. I just quit going. I finished off that wine. I'm not drinking anymore, and I got the DTs, and I got the shakes, and my telephone starts ringing, and you people in AA are calling and asking me where I am. One guy's real nutty. He called and asked if I was dead. Wouldn't he be surprised if I answered and said yes? So I'm just not showing up for those meetings, and I can't answer the phone either. I just let my message machine pick it up. Because, you know, the legs are watery, and I can't trust them, so I can't always stand up. And I'm not erasing the messages either, because when you're not calling them, I'm replaying them. I'm having like a mini meeting in my own house just listening to your voices. you know, and it came Thursday morning and the telephone rang and I thought, I'm just going to tell whoever it is just to leave me alone. Just leave me alone. You know, all I want to do is die here. And you know, I had begun that desperate prayer, the one that we desperately say when we're ready to get sober here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh God, please let me die. Please let me die. Oh God, don't let me die. That real desperate one. And he called and we had another discussion that I don't remember, and I wound up in a hospital that I wasn't going to go to, and I checked out 28 days later. And I wasn't a happy camper in that hospital. I screamed at him that I'd check myself in, I'd check myself out, and I thought they were abusing me. I really felt that. Until that counselor said to me about 2 weeks into there, he said, Pearl, what we want you to do is we want you to get your stuff and we want you to get out. He said, because you not only are never going to get this program, you're a detriment to every other patient in this hospital. And I thought, they want me out of here, I'm staying. And I screamed back at him, he couldn't kick me out because my insurance was paying for it, and I could stay there just as long as my insurance was willing to pay, and I stayed. And when I left that hospital, I had 30 days sober, and I still wasn't a happy camper. And, you know, and I walked out of there, and I told that those people in there, they were never going to see me again, and they took bets. They thought they'd see me like a block away at the liquor store. But anyway, I made it home that day, and I had regaled all those patients with all the wonderful things I was going to do when I got home. And what I actually did was I sat down in the middle of my living room and I cried because I didn't know what to do. Until I remembered it was Wednesday, and I always went to the Wednesday High Street meeting. And I got up and I went. You know, when I left that hospital, that counselor wrote my big book, Pearl, When in Doubt, Take Direction and Be of Service. And when I first started sharing, I used to share that it was easier for me to be of service and to take direction until I realized when I was being of service, I was taking direction. What an eye-opener that was. You know, I came by these things a little slowly. So what happened was you people just began putting me of work in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know how it happened, but 2 weeks later, I'm back up at that hospital. I'm doing a Monday afternoon Big Book study. And Monday night, I show up at Seal Beach because they made me the coffee pourer at my home group. You know, I went from coffee pourer to coffee maker to cleaner-upper to greeter, and I just finished my last year as secretary at that meeting I used to go to drunk. You know, how did that happen? How did a person go from going to a meeting drunk to being elected secretary? It only happens here at Alcoholics Anonymous. But you know, everything you people asked me to do, you know, I just did. On Tuesday, I went to the hospital. I took those women to a women's meeting. On Wednesday, I'm making coffee for one of the morning meetings. On Wednesday afternoon, I'm doing a big book study at another hospital. Wednesday, I'm baking cookies to take to the High Street meeting. Thursday, I'm making coffee for the Big Den meeting. And Friday, I'm making coffee for Reboots. And Saturday, they let me give out chips at Thursdays. And on Sunday morning, they still don't trust me at the parachute. They haven't given it back to me yet, even on a substitute basis. But they elected me treasurer that meeting when I had about 4 months sobriety. Also, when I had about 4 months sobriety, I sponsored my first girl. You see, because when I was 58 days sober, my sponsor told me that we're going to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're going to get in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're going to do it now. And I understood now. Because, you see, I knew if I didn't do something now, if I didn't change what I was doing, it was just going to be the same, and I was going to go back to drinking between meetings. So my back was against the wall, and I had to start doing something different. I had to do those steps that I told you people that I didn't need. And actually, what happened was this girl asked me to sponsor, and I told her no, and then I told my sponsor about it, and she told me yes. And in fact, she told me that, she asked me if I knew what a sponsor was, and I said, no, I got one, just don't know what they do. You know, and she told me that a sponsor takes you through the big book and through the steps, and anything after that's a bonus. And she said, you've done that, and you can take her through them, so you call her back and tell her you'll be happy to. I called her back and left out the happy part and became her sponsor. You know, that's just the way it was. That's just the way it was. You know, but you people just put me in service here. You people put me in service in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I'm coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I come to a lot of your meetings, begin to hear about the gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you got some gifts, I want them. That's the kind of person I am. You know, you got something here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I want them. I want my share. I may even want your share, too, but I at least want my share. You got some gifts, I want them. You see, what I thought I was going to get here in Alcoholics Anonymous and what I've gotten has been two different things. Because the first gift you gave me was the gift of hope. You see, people didn't call on me to share at a meeting. But one morning at the Marina Pacifica meeting, they called on me to share. And I'm drunk, or I'm hungover. And I started to cry, and I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm coming to a meeting every day, and I've been doing it for almost 2 years. And I'm drinking between meetings. And there's a man at that morning meeting named Frank H., and he reached over and he grabbed my hand. And he said, you just told my story. He said, and he had 26 years sober at the time. He said, I came to 178 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I drank between meetings. So when he shared his story with me, he gave me hope. He gave me hope to come to one more meeting. Just come to one more meeting, you know, because maybe this would be the meeting where you'd say it. Maybe this would be the meeting, you know, because I always went to those meetings waiting for you to say the thing that was going to make me sober. Because, you see, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, the ultimate victim. All of my problems were of your creation. If you'd just be a little bit nicer to Pearl, you'd just treat me better. I wouldn't have to drink the way I do. So if you were the problem, you had to be the solution, and I wasn't hearing any solution in there for me. But then Frank gave me hope. And the next gift you gave me was the gift of trust. You know, I had this sponsor, and I didn't trust anybody when I got here. Wasn't anybody trustable as far as I was concerned. Why would I trust perfect strangers here? But she told me it was necessary that I write that fourth step and trust her with my fifth. And I did that with her with one motive in mind. And my head told me, you know, I'm going to share this with her, and if I hear one word of this in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm out of here. This is a test, Polly. This is just a test. I hear it, I'm gone. I'm history, I'm out. And I don't ever hear any parts of my story here in Alcoholics Anonymous except when I share it. That's just the way it works. So the second gift you gave me was a gift of trust. You know, and the third gift you gave me was a gift of laughter. I hadn't laughed in a long time either when I got here. There was nothing funny going on in my life. You know, everything was serious. At least it was for me. You know, I nothing funny. But you know, I told you about that beach meeting I'm going to. And they call on this girl to share one way. I'll never forget it. And she said, she was on a pink cloud. Oh, she was on this pink cloud, and her life was wonderful, and everything was good, and I had 30 days. And Noel will remember this when they called on the next girl to share, and her cloud was so pink, it was fuchsia. Yeah. Got one at your meeting, too? Then they called on Happy, Joyous, and Free here. Yeah. And I told them I didn't have a pink cloud, let alone a fuchsia one. They told me I did. I just drank my way through it. Well, for some reason, I thought that was funny, and I started laughing. And, you know, I've just been able to laugh here in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, what you taught me to do was to laugh at myself. You know, that deep laughter. You know the kind of laughter I'm talking about. Starts at your toes, works all the way up, and it just explodes. You know, I find I'm able to laugh here in Alcoholics Anonymous. The next gift you gave me was a gift of love. I didn't care about anybody when I got here either. I told you I had those three sons and I loved them, but I just didn't care. I didn't care if I lived or I died, and I didn't care if you lived or you died. I just didn't care. I didn't have the energy to care. I didn't want to care. My experience seemed to tell me that once I started caring about somebody, they split. They were out of here. You know, I don't want to care. So I got here not being able to care about anybody, but I told you about that young girl that I began sponsoring at 4 months. Well, at our meeting, it's tradition for the sponsor to give the sponsee a birthday cake. You hold it up, and they blow out the candle. So she blew out the candle that night, and I put the cake down, and I put my arms around her, and I told her I loved her. And the deal was, I meant it. I don't know when I went from not caring about anybody until I could tell this girl that I love her and I mean it. I don't know when that happened. I don't know when it happened that my sponsor got a hold of me and had me do those steps, and she made me write that amends letter to that husband, ex-husband, and I said, I can't do that. I won't mean a word I'm saying. And I'm grateful for Frank. He said, Pearl, it doesn't matter. You don't have to mean it. You just have to do it. You just have to do it. It's in the action, Pearl. Because if you stay around here and stay sober long enough, there'd come a point when you're going to mean it. And I don't know when it happened. I sent him that letter, and I didn't mean a word I said. And today I do. Today I wish him success and happiness in all of his life. You know, I just want good things to happen to him. And I don't know when that one happened either. I swore revenge. You know, that's just the way it was. Alcoholics Anonymous works, but it works for me a little bit slowly. You know, I just have to come here and show up and do things. And, you know, the next gift you gave me was a thing called accountability and responsibility. You know, I had to get a job here, and I suit up and show up every day for my job, and I'm accountable today. and I was not accountable. And the last thing you gave me was the gift to be to do life. My sponsor told me one time, Pearl, there's only one thing you don't do very well. And I thought, boy, she knows me really well. She knows how close to perfect I am. And she told me that one thing I didn't do very well was life. And today I do life, and sometimes I don't like doing life. But you know, if you've heard my sponsor speak, she talks about great events. And I used to go with her when she spoke. I still do. But, you know, she would talk about these great events, and I used to think, oh, that's good for Polly, because Polly's such a sweet person, and she deserves all those good events, the great events in her life. You know, but they're never going to happen for me because, you know, we're just two different people. We're just two different people here. I have a granddaughter who's 10 years old, and when she was born, I went to the hospital to see. And, of course, I'd been drinking. And I reached over the little crib to pick her up and hold her, and my son put out his hand. And he said, Mom, she's sleeping. Wanted to just leave her be. You can hold her some other time. When the next child, JR, was born, they had a first birthday party for him, and I wanted to go. I went out, and I bought this wonderful gift, and I had a gift wrap, and it was beautiful, and I had planned for weeks to go, but I overshot the mark, you know. And I had to call and tell him I was sick and I couldn't make it. On August 12th of this year, my youngest son's daughter gave birth to Patricia Therese. And I went down to the hospital. I'm leaning over the crib, and I'm not going to ask if I can pick her up because I don't want him to say no. And I'm not even going to make any effort because I don't want that hand out there. Because there's days today when my son still smells my drink, when I'm acting crazy and acting a fool and cutting up. They'll sniff my glass, you know. So I'm sitting there on the edge of that bed, and finally my son reaches over and he picks up Patricia and puts her in my arms and said, would you like to hold her, Mom? And I'm holding her. And about an hour and a half went by, and I'm still holding her. She weighs 8 pounds and sitting on the edge of that bed, and I have no back brace. And she's heavy, and my back is beginning to hurt, and I'm not going to put her down. They may not let me hold her again. You know, so I'm holding her and holding her, and finally my son must have realized the pain that I was in because he reached over and he said, Mom, put her back in her crib now. He said, because you know you can come and hold her anytime you want. So at 7.5 years sobriety, I can tell you that great events will come to pass. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. For you new people here tonight, I hope you hear what I heard when I got here. You know, because I only had to do one thing. I only had to keep coming back. You know, when everything was lost and my world was coming down and I just didn't think I could make it anymore, you told me to keep coming back and I kept coming back. I kept coming back. And here I stand here 7.5 years later. How did I get there? How did I get there? You know, only through the love in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm a human being who has one basic need, that's to love and be loved, and I found that in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to thank you again for inviting me down to your meeting. Thank you.